This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
Hey, let me holler at you for a minute. I was like, all right, pulls me to the side and he's like, your boy's got a hit on him. And if you are with him, you're going to be collateral.
Welcome to the Off Duty Podcast, the podcast where we interview the men and women of law enforcement and help you to learn about the person behind the badge. If this is your first time tuning in, thank you. My name is Anthony McNeil, retired police officer and your host. Let's get started. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode number 43 of the Off Duty Podcast. Once again, it's me, your boy, Anthony McNeil. I appreciate you tuning in and listening to the podcast. And once again, I am blessed to have another great guest joining me on the podcast. This young man goes by the name of Officer 401. He's from the state of Georgia. He has 13 and a half years in law enforcement. He's a YouTube vlogger, and he's also a graphic designer. Again, help me welcome Officer 401. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you, sir?
I'm doing awesome. I'm doing really awesome. Good.
And I really appreciate you having me on the show this morning.
Yes, man. It's my pleasure. Like I said, before we started recording, I came across some of your videos on YouTube and I like what you were doing. And you're the type of officer that I want to have on the podcast because you're out there doing what I call humanizing the badge and you're doing your thing. So I really wanted to get you on and give my audience a chance to learn more about you for those that don't know who you are. And I always start each podcast off with the same question, and that's very simply, why law enforcement?
My father was a career U.S. Marshal. So I grew up, you know, the neighborhood kids would come over and we would get into his unmarked car and he had that one rotating blue light. And I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. He would turn on the siren and we would all freak out. So that's kind of what planted the bug for me to want to do law enforcement. Obviously, kids don't know in depth what all is involved in what we do. So when you're 6 years old, you're just worried about the lights and siren. But as I grew up, it was something that stayed with me. I got into computers. Everything I know about them is self-taught. I do programming, graphic design. I started designing websites. Almost got sued by Sony when I was 13 years old.
What was that all about?
Yeah, I was hacking one of their games, and because it was a paid game, they considered it a loss of profit because I was ruining the game. I was 13 years old. Wow. This is long before I knew like how to hide my IP address and all that stuff. So we get a cease and desist letter in the mail. And the last thing I remember is seeing my mom, and then it was like stars. She was quite angry about it.
I've had one of those moments before.
And she, right off the bat, like she took the keyboard from the computer, so I couldn't do anything. And that's when I figured out there's an on-screen keyboard. I've always had that mindset of if you take something from me or you are limiting me, I want to find a way around that. And that's kind of where I picked this up. I've done penetration testing with Kali Linux. I've used a bunch of different software and stuff, and that's really helped me. Of course, it was, you know, dumb when I was younger because I was doing it for the wrong reasons. Nothing destructive, just out of curiosity. But as I got older, it really helped me because when I was in high school, I got employed as an intern for the high school as a network administrator. And this is while I'm a junior attending there. Wow. So they were trusting me with full access to every teacher's computer. And I took that very seriously. I never did anything I wasn't supposed to. So I did 2 years as a network administrator, move on, did a very short stint in the U.S. Air Force. But when I got out, I had remembered that police work that was my goal. Now, let me backtrack just for one thing. When I was 16 years old, I started doing ride-alongs with the local department. Okay. That is what lit the flame, so to speak. So I started doing these ride-alongs, and I remember one time they had a call box outside the state, a very old station, and I picked it up. Dispatcher answered. I'm like, hey, it's so-and-so, and I'm here for the ride-along. About 5 minutes later, there's a Crown Vic that comes sliding into the parking lot sideways, and the guy had the window down, and he's like, get in. We got a stabbing. I'm like, oh, okay. So I run out there. We start going down the road, and he's putting on gloves. And I'm like, what kind of gloves are those, sir? And he's like, these are my ass kicking gloves. Get ready. I'm like, so yeah, I always had so much fun doing the ride alongs, and it just really fueled me. And I think the biggest motivating factor for getting into law enforcement, people have their own reasons for getting into it. I wanted to be the person that people called when they had no other choice but to call 911. I wanted to be the person to solve that problem, mm-hmm. whatever they had. So when I first started, I was only 20 years old. I couldn't buy ammo. I couldn't buy beer. And I was having to solve marital problems between people that had been married for 30 years at 20, 21 years old. It's a big responsibility. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's why I like asking that question, because this path is different for all of us. And there's always something in each story that's entertaining or touching or something. And people always ask me, why do you start off with that question? That's why, because, yeah, we all end up in the same place for the most part, but we all take different paths to get there. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's part of all of our journeys on this whole crazy ride that we call law enforcement as a profession. That's for sure. Once you got into the profession, was it what you thought it would be?
Yes and no. I was not expecting the paperwork. The amount of paperwork is ridiculous. You're going to do a report when you're right. You're going to do one when you're wrong. You're going to do a report when you do a report. But it's worth it, because proper documentation leads to good, solid cases, therefore a conviction. And that is your ultimate goal. So, you know, when new officers are coming in, they try to take shortcuts and cut corners and stuff. And it's like, listen, dude, you're the one that's going to be up there on that stand having to testify to what you're writing right now.
Yeah.
You just had this guy rob a store and all you wrote is a paragraph. They're going to smoke you on the stand. I'm just letting you know.
No doubt.
You got to be thorough and stuff. But it's interesting how much the social climate has changed even since I started. I mean, there's some guys that have been doing this for 40 years. I don't have anything on them. But when I started police work, this was before Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. This is before, long before George Floyd. It was long before we had this huge divide in the country. And I hate seeing the way things are going right now.
Yeah.
You know, when I've worked for two agencies total. The first one I was at for almost 8 years, and I've been with my current one for almost five and a half, or around five and a half. The area that I worked in the city was primarily low income housing. Mm-hmm. And I took pride in the fact that when I left there, I could drive through any given project. We had 10 project housing units, neighborhoods there. And I took pride in the fact that I look white. I'm actually like Mexican, Japanese, and Scandinavian, but okay. You know, close enough. I could walk through the projects and people would wave at me. They would shake my hand. They would honk at me while they're driving by, because I treated them with respect.
Yeah.
And some officers don't. It's no secret. I'm not going to sit here and tell you everybody does. But I took pride in the fact that I was accepted by a different culture, and I valued that. You know, people would come and tell me stuff that they wouldn't tell other officers because they knew I wasn't going to burn them. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not taking up too much of your time. To the next question. The final thing I was going to say is, I have always been a big believer in holding anybody in power accountable for their actions. And it was unfortunate, but my department decided to create this new division called the Aggressive Patrol Squad.
Okay.
You're not assigned calls. You ride with a partner. You wear outer vests, thigh holster. We thought we were badasses, not going to lie. I apologize for language.
Nope, you're all good.
But we formed this unit, and at the time it was just a two-man unit. It was me and my partner, and I loved it. It was great, man. Every day we were getting in foot chases, because our primary goal was to target the high crime, high drug areas. Mm-hmm. We were hiding in bushes, looking at like hand-to-hand transactions. We were stopping people with no light on their bicycle, and we were getting like cocaine, pounds of marijuana. You'd be surprised what people have on a bike.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, things started to get a little bit awkward, because my partner at the time started making like really sketchy stops. And I remember being in the passenger seat. He was driving this night. We're behind this car. Nothing was wrong with it. And he calls out traffic stop, which in Georgia is 1038. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as I hear 1038, I'm like, are you stopping him? And he's like, yeah, he didn't stop all the way back there, that stop sign. And I'm like, yeah, he did. He definitely stopped, because I'm looking for probable cause too, just like you are.
Yeah.
So he started creating probable cause that was non-existent. And I had a huge problem with that. First of all, I don't want to go to federal court because you messed up. And I'm not about that. If I don't have it, I don't have it. I'll get you another day. Whatever the case may be, it's not worth losing my livelihood, but more importantly, my integrity. You know what I mean? So I've made mistakes, but not to challenge, nothing to challenge my integrity. I'm sorry. I was a few days late on an oil change once. Like, that was the stuff I used to get in trouble for. So I went to the captain, told him kind of what was going on. I'm not a big believer in like just snitching on people for no reason, but this is a big deal. Yeah. This is affecting people's civil rights. So I felt the need to say something, and the captain put me in a separate car. That was their answer to this problem. We'll give you your own car. Fine. At least it's something, because I don't want to be in that car anymore.
Right.
So long story short, he gets involved in this huge scandal where he actually came clean about it. And the chief at the time lied. So she got fired and he got to stay. But to make a very long story short, I am the reason why he did eventually end up getting terminated. And still to this day, part of me feels guilty. But at the same time, it's like he could have killed somebody, hurt, you know, the possibilities are endless. Yeah. For sure. And the moment I knew, I think what solidified everything for me, I remember we were in the projects one time, we're doing foot patrol, and this very well-known gangbanger was walking through, and he was like, "Hey, let me holler at you for a minute." I was like, "All right." Pulls me to the side, and he's like, "Your boy's got a hit on him. And if you are with him, you're going to be collateral. I'm just giving you a heads up. You didn't hear S from me, but I respect you. You've always been nice to us. I'm just letting you know, stay out of the way." Yeah. And I was like, ooh, that was a huge wake up call for me.
Wow.
So yeah, that's, yeah, wow. it's been an interesting career so far.
That's crazy, man, because you said a lot of interesting things. And first of all, kudos to you for keeping your integrity, because 99.9% of us out there are just trying to do our job and go home every day. But unfortunately, just like any profession, we do have some that tote that line or step over that line. And the unfortunate part is when that one person do that, it reflects on the profession as a whole, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the sad part. And this is where we end up in 2020. But because of a few incidents, you know, the whole profession is taking a hit. So I take my hat off to you for doing the right thing. And you said something else that I always try to preach on this podcast. And that is every interaction that we have with a civilian, whether it's good or bad, leaves an impression. So why not take the opportunity to try to do your best to make that a positive interaction? Where it goes from there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where it goes from there, who knows? But at least you made the attempt. And when that person walks away, if nothing else, they can say you were fair, polite, and professional. So again, man, I take my hats off to you for standing up and doing the right thing, because not only was he putting himself in jeopardy, but you, your family, and, you know, the community in jeopardy. So yeah, you did the right thing. So I wouldn't feel guilty about that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. I agree. It's just, I'm not that kind of guy, man. Like, I'm not here to get people in trouble and stuff. But again, if you're going to be violating people's civil rights and you're going to lie, he had one officer show up one time. It was like, "Hey, what'd you stop him for?" Very typical line when your backup unit shows up. He had the nerve to tell this guy, "None of your business." That guy turned around, walked away, went 10-8, got back in his car and drove off. He's like, "Whatever you're doing, I want no part of it." So, and you're right. We do have those bad apples. And I really strive to go out of my way to be extra friendly to people on calls. Now, is there times where you have to be firm? Absolutely. Oh, I could turn the butthole on real quick. But if you don't need to be, why are you being it? You don't have to be this robot all the time. When I used to show up on calls, you see these officers stand face to face with people demanding to know answers. These are witnesses. Why would you talk to them like that? So at the time I used to smoke. So I would get out of my car, and instead of standing face to face, I'd stand next to them, put them at ease. It's all about your body language.
Yeah.
I'd light my cigarette right there. They're like, "Okay, maybe this guy's cool." And I'd be like, "Hey, you see anything over there?" And it'd be like signaling me to go around the corner somewhere, because they don't want people to see that they're snitching, basically. But that, over time, that earns your reputation. When you treat people with respect, you will get a reputation that people will help you. I know if I got in a fight on the side of the road, somebody from around there would jump in with me. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah, you reminded me of a story that I've told before on the podcast, but I retired in 2013. And my last week, we had a young man that was bipolar, and he was arrested, and they took him up to the jail, and they had to separate him because he was causing problems in the cell with some of the other inmates. So they take him back to isolation, and he goes back there and he starts flooding the toilets and all this other stuff. So Turns out his dad and I, his dad was a very prominent pastor in the community that I worked in. And his dad and I had a run in where I end up locking up his dad over some protest stuff and all this other things. So the day that he got arrested, I was a hostage negotiator and they wanted to take him out of the cell. So my lieutenant says, hey, can you go up and talk to him? Well, I get off the elevator and the young officer that was going to be taking my place as a negotiator is standing there and he has a taser in his hand and black gloves. And I'm looking at him like, what are you doing? And he goes, well, I'm going to talk to this guy. I'm like, dude, talking is the last thing you look like you're coming to do when you got a taser and black gloves on.
It's all about perception.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm like, you're a negotiator, dude. Your weapon is your mouth. And he was a big dude. He's about 6'7", about 260, 270. But no one had taken the time to talk to this guy. So he was causing all these problems simply because when he got arrested, he wanted someone to check on his dog. And the officers at the scene refused to do it. So once I took the time to talk to him, sent somebody over to check on his dog, and his dog was fine. He had no more problems with him the rest of the night. And when his old man came in the next day to bond him out, I was at the front desk and he remembered me from our incident. And he said, hey, I just want to say thank you. I heard about what you did for my son. Hey, there's no problem, man. I just treat him like I treat everybody. And if you just take the time to listen to people and like you say, just be human, and you ain't got to put up all these defenses and all that stuff. I mean, yeah, there's time for all of that, but 99% of the time, just be human. That's all people want. Mm-hmm. That's it. Just be human, man.
Absolutely.
Hey, before we get to the next segment, I want to ask you a question. Are you aware that most officers are unknowingly causing collateral damage to not only their mental health, but also their personal relationships? Well, I've put together a 90-day mastermind that will help these officers identify and apprehend the number one suspect that is causing this damage, resulting in a clearer, more focused mind while working, stronger personal relationships with the people that are important to them, and more peace at home. And I'm doing this using my simple three-step process that I call Document, Discuss, and Deploy. If you want more details, simply go to theoffdutypodcast.com/mastermind. That's theoffdutypodcast.com/mastermind. Okay, let's get back to the episode. I want to get into the first segment here of the podcast, and this is what I call Dig Deeper. And for those that don't know, this is where I go poking around my guest social media and I pull out certain posts and I craft questions around those posts. All right.
Only imagine what you found.
It's not that bad. The first post I found, it was actually a picture of a tattoo that I believe you recently got of a cactus. Okay. And I think it was done by your brother-in-law. But my question, yes, after reading that, there was actually two comments that I crafted my questions around. The first question was from a gentleman by the name of Mr. Purple Guy. And his question was, did it hurt? I'm thinking of getting a tattoo myself. And another gentleman by the name of Jack, I can't pronounce the last part of his username, he replied, they hurt, yeah, but if it's something you really want, they are worth it. It's not crazy painful unless you do colors. And my question about that post to you is, around that post, first of all, does the tattoo symbolize anything or have any significant meaning?
I was born in West Texas.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm partially Hispanic, Japanese. Those are both from my dad's side, and then Scandinavian, Russian, and something else from my mom's side. So I was actually born in El Paso, Texas, as was my dad. So my heart has always been kind of in the desert. We moved all over the place with him being a U.S. Marshal. He was stationed in Georgia, mm-hmm. Dallas, Pennsylvania, Arizona. I spent a lot of time as a kid in Arizona, and I have always loved the desert climate. I've always loved, there's something very tranquil to me about cactus. I don't know why.
Okay.
I have no explanation. They hurt when you rub on them. They shouldn't be tranquil, but I enjoy the desert. I love being out in the desert. So, you know, that's probably the only complaint I have about Georgia is you can't walk to the mailbox without getting drenched. And the climate's just so much more dry and it's just nice. I love the desert. So that cactus was supposed to kind of symbolize that. I had an idea for a tattoo I wanted to get. My father passed away last year from colon cancer, and he was a huge fan of Superman. Okay. He loved the old Christopher Reeve movies, like long time when first came out in the '70s. And I when I went to his house after he had passed to get things together, he had a old school style Superman magnet on his fridge that it kept for years and years and years. So what I wanted to get was that kind of underneath my chest and making it look like ripped skin around it, like it's underneath. But my brother-in-law is new to tattooing, so I wanted to pick something a little bit easier for him to try to do. And maybe I'll leave that one to the pros.
Is that the only tattoo you have?
No, I have both arms covered. These were all done, believe it or not, by another officer in his house. Okay. Incredibly talented. I still need to get the dragon shaded in, but incredibly talented. This arm is all based off of Japanese culture. A lot of people are like, why do you have the devil on your arm? It's not the devil. Those are the masks they used to wear before they go into battle. And then on this arm, it's simple. It's just the four elements. I love the four elements.
Okay.
And at the top, I don't know if you can see it on here.
Yeah.
At the state of Texas with the rattlesnake and then a star over El Paso where I was born. A little bit further up, I have my original badge number and my dad's badge number merged. So his is in like the old Western style, like U.S. Marshal font you would expect. And then mine is like a new age graffiti, kind of showing the old school and new school together. And then on this side is the Freemason and my new cactus.
Now, being a graphic designer, did you come up with these designs?
No, believe it or not, I did come up with the one of my dad's badge number and mine put together. I did that in Photoshop.
Okay.
But for the ones on my arms, this guy is incredibly talented. And I gave him the basic foundation of what I wanted. But I told him, be creative. Have fun. I want to see what you come up with.
Nice.
Create whatever you want. As long as it's based around this little foundation. And he did an amazing job. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for those that are listening to this outside of the video, if you go over to Officers 401, any of his social media, I'm sure he probably has some pictures of some of the tattoos. You can at least see the one that I'm referring to with the cactus. Before we continue, can you go ahead and give out your social media where people can follow you and check out what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm primarily on YouTube. I have just about like, I think it's 640,000 subscribers on there, 80 something on Instagram. Those are the two primary platforms that I use. I don't post a lot on Facebook. I've got 19K on there, but primarily between YouTube and Instagram, that's where I'm prominent.
Just search Officer 401.
Yeah, if you go to YouTube, anytime you search for anything, if whatever you search for is the name of a channel, the first icon you will see is round. If it's a video, it's rectangular. So if you just search Officer 401, there should be a little round icon of my logo. You just click that and you can see all my videos on there. Gotcha. And this smiling, happy face.
I encourage you guys to go over and check out 401's content. He puts up some great content. Another question I want to ask you around that post. What is or was something that really hurt you that you went through or that you had to do, but it was something that you really wanted to do?
Oh, wow. That is a great question.
And that could be physically hurt or emotionally.
I would have to say probably going to the gym. I know that might sound weird to say, but I have always hated any type of like physical activity other than tennis. I used to play a bunch of tennis.
Okay.
But outside of that, like I've never been a gym rat. I don't want to get out there in this heat and run. That's not fun to me. I have stuff on the computer I could be doing. But my wife, she is a big gym person. She moved here from California and she wanted to go to the gym all the time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go. And so we've been going since about January of last year. And I have seen an incredible transformation in the year and a half I've been going, especially within the last 6 months. We've really been pushing it. I'm starting to see the results. When you first start out, you don't see them. So you start getting discouraged. And it's like, what's the point? I'm just coming here to induce pain on myself and go home and there's no change. But I stuck with it. And like now on leg press, I can lift 720 pounds. I struggled with like 150 last year. So to be able to push almost, 800 pounds, it's like, okay. Like maybe I'm getting somewhere.
Wow. Yeah. That's a hell of a jump.
Yeah. So, and then, I'm starting to see definition in my shoulders, my biceps and stuff. And she's always like, she's my biggest cheerleader. So she's always encouraging me and saying, baby, you look great. She's always telling me to take off my shirt. I'm like, stop, weirdo. We're in Walmart.
How long you guys been married?
Anyway, less than a year. It's a new marriage.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. I want to ask you about another post here.
Okay.
And this was a picture of a new pool that you were putting up for the family. You remember that post?
I don't remember the post specifically, but
okay. Well, the caption read, "What better way to spend a day off than building a pool? Here's the before and after. The kids loved it. I can't wait to jump in tomorrow grilled some delicious chicken, and Mrs. Swirl One made broccoli and rice for sides. Awesome day, and I hope yours was too. And my question about that is, besides spending time with the family, what do you do to enjoy getting away from the job?
Nothing. I have no life whatsoever. No, my life, my family is my life. You know what I mean? It's my family is the escape from work.
Okay.
You know, I come home, I have a supportive wife that busts her behind here at the house to make sure everything's cleaned all the time. She does an amazing job. Mm-hmm. My wife is Latina, so I love Mexican food, and this girl can cook. So, you know, she takes care of the house. She does an amazing job. I go to work, I pay the bills, but really she has it harder than I do because her job is 24 hours a day with our children. So I forgot what the question was. I'm sorry.
Besides spending time with the family, what do you do for enjoyment to get away from the job?
Well, like I said, we do the gym, but you said enjoyment. So I'll move on to the next thing. I have started teaching her how to play tennis. I played tennis throughout my entire youth. So I started teaching her back in, I think it was about February, and she's actually getting pretty good. I'm a little scared. I don't want her to win, but she's getting really good at it. But we just find little things like that to do, take the kids to the park. Yeah. You know, it could be any number of things, but anything away from work. I don't usually think about work. So once I get home, that uniform comes off, my mind shuts it out. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm not like one of these rookies that likes to go home and listen to the radio. I'm long past those days.
Oh, man, you just brought back some memories. I remember when I first started, I had the scanner in the house and the whole nine.
I did too. I'm not going to lie. I did too.
Yeah, man. But you need that. And again, I take my hat off to you because one of the things that I've really been researching a lot the last few weeks is the mental health side of law enforcement. And to have that support at home and that ability to be able to, when you get to that, once you walk out that department, just leave that everything there and not take it home with you. Mm-hmm. I wish more guys could do that because I know when I look back at a lot of the guys that I work with, law enforcement defined who they were. And that's a recipe for all the emotional garbage that's going to come down the road because it creates no balance in your life and everything's out of whack. And then the stress, divorce, you name it, substance abuse, all kinds of things just follows because you've dedicated so much time and energy into this one thing. And I don't know if you had a chance to listen to my interview with Nate Sylvester, but Nate is the guy that made the TikTok video that got him fired in response to LeBron James. And the story ended up going national. But he said something during our interview that holds very true. And that is, despite law enforcement being a great career, it's also a career that takes a lot from you, but gives very little back. And I find that to be extremely true because, like I said, so many guys and girls, they get caught up in this profession and they let it define who they are as a person. All their friends are cops. All their activities are law enforcement related. And if you don't have that balance, it's easy just to screw things up and everything gets out of whack. And then, you know, you're 20 years into your career and you're drinking. You've been married two or three times and just the whole gamut that, you know, everything that comes with that. So, again, I applaud you, man, for having that ability to just leave the job at the job because you have to do that.
Well, I will say when I say that it's much easier, you know, said than done. I'm human. Mm-hmm. I have, thank God for my wife. Cause there's been a couple times where something has just really riled me up and I'm not normally like that. I mean, you can tell from this interview, like this is me. I like to play around. I like to tell jokes. I love making people laugh. Every time you've laughed on this show, it's like made me happy. So there you go. You just did it again. But, you know, I have my moments, though. I have moments where I call them weakness. Mm-hmm. She calls it being human. We were talking about this not long ago. She's like, I think you suffer from PTSD. Who wouldn't suffer from PTSD after 13 years of what you've had to see? Yeah. You've had to give CPR to people with half their head missing. You've had deceased babies under beds and stuff. It's like that would mess with anybody. I just think I have a certain way of dealing with it that maybe other people haven't thought of or I don't know. I don't like talking about mental health when it comes to me because think about it. I mean, most of the people in law enforcement, it's a male-driven occupation. most of these males are the alpha male type, mm-hmm. and they don't think they have anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
And I think I fall somewhere in that category. But recently I've kind of come to light that, you know, I might have minor PTSD. I don't know. I don't know enough about psychology to be able to, you know, diagnose myself. But I think a big part of it, too, is you have a certain personality type that gets into this line of work.
For sure.
You have to be selfless. You have to wear heavy equipment that you know is going to screw up your back over time. You know you're not going into this for the money because you're never going to get rich doing this job.
Right.
And then you are pushed and pushed and pushed to work harder and harder and harder while experiencing these traumatic events. And some people cave. They implode
yeah.
under that kind of pressure. And I will never make fun of them because I completely understand it. The problem is some people that let it stay at work have a better chance of not suffering from something like that than the people who are so driven that they just make it their entire life. And I would not recommend that for anybody, because I tell them at the end of the day, the bad guys are always going to be there.
Right.
50 years from now, when you pass away, guess what? They're still going to be there.
Exactly.
So you have to take yourself into account too, and your own personal mental health, because like I said, the bad guys are always going to be there. There's no rush to get to them. I have to have this talk with rookies a lot because they're so anxious to get on the road. I'm like, take your time and learn case law, mm-hmm. learn your boundaries of what you can and can't do. Learn about the Fourth Amendment and your limitations in it, because the crackhead down the street is going to be there next week too.
Yeah.
So I think people that consume, they let the law enforcement consume their life, they're usually the ones that seem to fall into that trap.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, the last few weeks, I've really been studying this a lot because I'm like you. I think I came out of my 20 years, I don't want to say unscathed, but I'm not as bad as some that are suffering. And I think it's because I was able to compartmentalize and I had activities outside of the job that allowed me to, I guess, escape a little less unharmed as some. But I definitely had my issues. And if anyone that goes back and listen to previous episodes, you understand what I'm talking about when I talk about that, because my last 5 years on the job, I hate it. And it changed me as a person. And as a matter of fact, my last episode, I told the story about where I was working the front desk and I got into it with this asshole, and he had left and went on about his day. And about 30 minutes later, a lady comes in to make an accident report. And I look at her and I go, "Can I help you?" And she says, "Yes, I was coming to make an accident report, but you just looked at me like, what the fuck do you want?" And and she probably was right, because mentally my head was still back dealing with that asshole from 30 minutes earlier. And I was explaining in my last interview, you think about that. We go through our day, something like that happens, then it spills over to other runs, other interactions with administrative, other officers, other citizens. We get home. A wife tells you, "Hey, the toilet's not working." Now you're still dealing with this mess from earlier today, and now you're getting into it with her because you haven't solved the problem that you had when you left work. So day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, that shit builds up on you. And we think we're okay, like you said, but deep down, we all are a little scarred, some more than others. But it's an interesting topic. And when we're done recording here, I want to send you something that I'm putting together. And you can take a look at it and tell me what you think.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I want to go ahead and get into the last post here. And this was a split picture of you and your patrol car when you first started, and a picture from now. And the caption read, "I was a kid. I've now spent over a third of my life as a cop. The job has changed me in ways I've never imagined, both good and bad." And my first question around that post is, what was the 15-year-old 401 like?
The 15-year-old 401 was so eager to be a cop, he illegally put red and blue lights on the visor of his personal car. I say personal like I had another option at the time. Man, I want to be a cop so bad. Like, I wanted to look the part. I wanted my car. I got my windows tinted like 5% all the way around. This is a Ford Taurus that's red.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can imagine how ridiculous it looked. But no, like, and honestly, being in that mode almost got me killed. I was in the town that I'm in now, and I got on the road one night. I was working security. I was working a security job, and I noticed this. We were on a major highway, and there was this red Ford Explorer that was all over the road. Mm-hmm. It was so obvious this guy was DUI. So I called 911, and I reported it. Now, this time I had a spotlight on my car. I had a red and blue flashing light in the visor. And this is before impersonators were really a thing. So if somebody saw it, they were like, oh, damn, that's a cop. Keep in mind, again, I'm security. I don't have any weapons on me. So I end up following this guy. I'm waiting for the cops to like catch up. And I'm not trying to pull him over or anything. I didn't do that. But it's like nobody showed up. Like nobody cared. So we get into the next county. I call their 911. I did this for 80 miles.
Wow.
Following behind this guy until we got into South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And right past the gate to South Carolina, he out of nowhere just pulls over off to the side of the road onto the shoulder. So I pulled in behind him. I flipped down that visor and I turned it on. He gets out. He starts walking towards my car. I said, sir, stay in your vehicle. I'm like 19 years old. Like, I have no idea. What am I doing right now? And he walks up. I'm standing between the door and the car. And he looks and he's like, your security? Pulls out a gun, points it at me, and then brings me to the hood of my car, bends me over, takes the phone. I was on the phone with dispatch because I was saying, he's got a gun. He's got a gun. Takes the phone, puts it in his pocket, and holds the gun on the back of my head.
Wow.
It was at this moment I realized I messed up.
Wow.
So, wow. Yeah. So, of course, now the cavalry comes out, right? I got South Carolina state troopers coming out the woods out of nowhere, and they swarm us. 5 minutes later, I am in handcuffs in the back of a state trooper's car, and this guy is being let go. And I'm like, did I go into the Twilight Zone? Like, I called for him.
Yeah.
So they came back and they were like, you know, this guy's accusing you of like stalking him and you've been following him. I'm like, yeah, I thought he was drunk. They're like, well, he's not drunk. He's a Marine and he's on his way to Paris Island. And you're very lucky he didn't pull that trigger.
Wow.
And I'm like, how am I the bad guy in this? This guy was like all over the road, could have taken out cars. Yeah. It was that bad. It wasn't just like a little, I call it weaving and swerving. Yeah. But it was like across multiple lanes, which is why I called. So long story short, they let me out of the car. They had to call every dispatch center between where I live and where they were at. And they verified, okay, he's not lying. He's actually telling the truth. That's when they let me out, got me out of the handcuffs. Thank you, Lord. They never saw the red and blue light. Otherwise, I would have been going for a felony.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So they never saw that. And I get back in my car. I'm shaking.
I bet.
I'm so nervous. Like, I almost went to jail. I could have died. This could have gone way worse. Yeah. So I get in my car, patting my, where's my phone? He still has it. So that night, I have no idea how this dude found me. That night, I got a message on MySpace. I'm dating myself here. I got a message on MySpace from this guy. And he was like, he gave me this long speech about how I need to be careful and so on and so forth. And he said, I tell you what, meet me at Golden Corral tonight. I'll give you your phone back and I'll buy your meal.
Wow.
And I met him. He was the coolest guy ever. Super nice. He brought his son. We had great conversation.
That's awesome.
And I never saw him again after that. But it really taught me a lesson to You got to be careful. How are you just going to follow behind somebody with red and blue?
Yeah, no shit.
And you ain't got no gun. So
lesson learned.
Yes.
I want to go ahead and get into the next segment here. This is what I call my random seven. These are just seven random automated questions. All right. And the first question, which country do you think has the best food?
Which country has the best food?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Japan. Oh, sushi. I could three meals a day.
Really?
If it could be sushi, if I could afford that without going broke in 3 days, I would get sushi.
I've never had sushi, but I know a lot of people that eat it and they say it's extremely good. Maybe one day I'll get the guts to try it.
I love it.
Now, are there different variations of it? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Because when I think of sushi, I think of raw fish.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people do. I mean, that's kind of the stereotype. You know what I mean? So with sushi, I mean, you have different kinds of fish.
Okay.
You know, they put like the slab on top of some rice, basically sushi rice, which is like really sticky and it's almost slightly sweet.
Okay.
I love sushi rice. So they either put like a slice of fish on top of that. It could be tuna. It could be salmon. You choose whitetail. But they also have fish eggs, which that's even more acquired. Yeah. That's not something I would recommend starting with. That's for the little bit more adventurous. They have baby octopus. I'm really making this worse, aren't I?
Yeah, you're not selling this very well.
That's why I'm a cop and not a salesman. But yeah, there's different types. I mean, They have some that's cooked, so you don't have to worry about eating something raw. So, you know, if it's something you're interested in trying, don't go to your grocery store and get sushi or the gas station, because you'll spend 10 minutes eating it and then 10 hours in the bathroom. Don't do that. Go to a reputable place. Just ask them for the cooked menu, you know, have them show you on the menu, like where the cooked stuff is, and maybe start with that. And if you like it, bump up to the next step.
Sounds good. I'm going to try it. It's something that I've always wanted to try, but I'm going to give it a shot and see. I know my daughter, she likes it. So I'm going to give it a shot and see. My next question: what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten that was deep fried?
Probably green tomatoes. I'm not a picky eater. Okay. I like food. But there's just something about the texture of like fried green, because it's all mushy inside and a hot tomato in your mouth. Yeah, no thanks. I'll pass on that.
Next question: what's one thing your kids will always associate with you?
Officer 401, I'm sure. That's a good question. I'm not really sure. Probably, if I had to guess, it would be safety and security. I'm very paranoid when it comes to the security of my home, security while we're out and about. You know, I usually wear basketball shorts. That's just my thing. I always wear them. But I have an inside-the-waist carry holster with a G43 in there. You would never know I'm carrying, but everywhere we go, if me and my wife are watching a movie at night, my gun is right there. Yeah. If I'm cooking in the kitchen, my gun is right there. I've always got a gun on me. But I've gone so far as to get motion lights all around the house. I have a 6-foot fence, privacy fence put all the way around, cameras. And then I even secured my front door with kick plates. So the SWAT team would have a very difficult time with a battering ram getting into my house. Oh, and an alarm system too. So I'm very paranoid about security, but you know, my wife thinks it's overboard sometimes, but she said, you know what? You keep us safe. So I'll let you handle the security stuff and you do whatever you want. As long as you're keeping us safe, I don't have anything to complain about.
That's the bottom line. Next question.
Well, let me add one thing. You have seen this as an officer. Think about how fast a home invasion occurs. Within seconds. Yeah. You don't have any time to react when somebody's busting through your front door with a loaded firearm. Yeah. And none of this stuff I did is going to just keep everybody in the world out. But it gives me that extra few seconds to grab what I need and handle business.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I sleep with my Glock right there on the nightstand next to me. And
yes, sir. Me too.
Underneath my wife's side of the bed and my side of the bed are both AR-15. So, she has hers and I have mine. So if you got about
picturing a Walking Dead episode right now.
So if you come in the house, you got about 20 steps before you meet hell. So the next question. If you could be a top tier athlete in any sport, what would you play and why?
It would probably be tennis. I grew up watching people like Pete Sampras. I love watching Serena Williams. She's incredibly talented and that girl can move.
She's a beast, isn't she? Even as she gets up in age, she still has it.
I've been watching her for a while and she is still like, she looks like she's 20 years old.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Yeah. I get a month older and I look like a cheeseburger. It's not fair. It is not fair.
I hear you, dude. I just turned 55 and trust me, it doesn't get any easier. Next question. Would you rather find something valuable that you lost or fix something valuable that was broken?
Fix something valuable. I think that would add more value to it. The fact that you were able to restore it.
I agree with that. I agree. Two more questions here.
Absolutely.
If you could be friends with a ghost, what era would you want that ghost to be from?
Ooh, what era? Probably not the 70s, because it'd probably be one of those villains from Scooby-Doo. I'd probably pick the 1990s Casper. That's my boy right there.
Last question. What housework do you absolutely refuse to do?
Folding laundry. Right off the bat. I'll tell you that right now. I'll do the dishes for 6 hours over folding laundry for 15 minutes. I hate it. God bless my wife.
I hear you, man. My wife makes me do my own laundry now. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. She says I have too much shit, so I have to do it myself.
Yeah, I got lucky with that one because she handles all the laundry. She does the kids' laundry, our laundry. And I've never let anybody do that before. I've always preferred to do mine because I'm very particular. I have two hampers, pile of clean, pile of dirty. That's all I needed. But thankfully for her, you know, she'll sit there on the couch for an hour and fold stuff. And I always make it a point to thank her when I open my drawer and it's full of fresh, clean clothes that's folded. I make sure she knows how much I appreciate that, because I hate that job. I would hate that.
I hear you, man. I want to get into the last segment here. This is what I call this or that. I'm going to give you two topics. You just simply pick one. You don't really have to explain why you picked it, but just choose one. It's kind of like a rapid fire type thing.
Okay.
All right. The first one, passenger or driver?
Driver.
Attend a party or host a party?
Host a party.
Salad or sandwich?
Is it Caesar? Caesar's really good. If it's Caesar, then I'll go with the Caesar salad. If it's not Caesar salad, I'm going with the sandwich.
You ever had a fattoush salad?
I've never heard of that. Oh.
It's a Mediterranean Mideastern salad. It's probably my favorite salad. It is absolutely delicious. It has a special seasoning on it called sumac, and it is absolutely delicious. I don't know if they have any Mediterranean or Middle Eastern restaurants in Georgia, but if you come across one.
Not where I'm at, no.
Yeah, if you come across one, stop in and ask for a fattoush salad.
Okay, I'm going to need you to send that to me because I can't spell that.
Okay.
I'm going to walk in there like, do you have can I have the patootie salad? I don't remember what he called it. I'm all about trying some new food. And I'm a huge foodie, love trying different cultures' food. I'm huge on becoming more educated on different cultures and learning their customs. And I love that stuff. So, and then when it comes to food, I'm like full on fat boy in your kitchen.
Given that, I highly encourage you to try Mediterranean.
Absolutely.
Concerts or sporting events?
Concert.
French fries or onion rings?
Man, you got these hard questions today. Again, are they McDonald's fries or any other fries? If they're McDonald's fries, I'll choose those. Any other fries, I'll go with the onion rings.
Growth or security?
That's security.
Personal growth.
Security.
iOS or Android?
Android. All day.
All day. All day. Sneakers or sandals?
Sandals.
Couch or recliner?
Recliner. All day. Yes.
And the last one, movie at home or movie at the theater?
Movie at home. More quality time.
For sure. For sure. Officer 401, man, listen, it's been a pleasure getting to learn more about you. Thank you so much for coming on and giving my audience a chance to hear what you got going on and hear your story and everything and learn more about you. Any last words before we get out of here?
I just want to say the whole purpose in me creating my channel was to create transparency between law enforcement and the public. That was the purpose of this channel. I've always been a big believer in community outreach because that is what changes things. You know, ruling by dictatorship isn't going to change anything. Use of force all the time isn't going to change anything. It's about learning your neighborhood, learning your communities. And I'm hoping that with my channel, I get messages all the time from people being like, man, I've watched you for 3 years. I just graduated from the academy. I'm on FTO right now training. I just want to thank you so much. And that means a lot to me. There's college professors showing my videos in their courses. Like,
wow.
I had no idea it was like that until like a few years ago, these emails start rolling in where it's like, hey, I had one guy tell me that he was on the brink of killing himself. And my videos are the only thing that kept him from doing that when he was going through a rough time.
Wow.
I mean, no pressure, right? So,
yeah.
You know, this channel has changed so much, not just itself, but it's changed me as a person because I finally have a platform where I have a voice and I can reach hundreds of thousands of people that for some weird messed up reason actually want to hear what I have to say. And I take that seriously. It's a responsibility to me. And I want to do the police world as well as the civilian world justice by explaining what we do and helping encourage officers to do the right thing.
Yeah. And I've checked out your content and I can honestly say that I can see why all those things have happened because you have a great channel there. You put out some great content. Some valuable content. You're not just on camera just to be on camera. And you have a lot to say. And your perspective on different events and everything that's going on in the world, it's one that needs to be heard. And I take my hat off to you once again, because as soon as I saw some of your videos, I immediately wanted to reach out to you because honestly, I had not come across anything that you had put out previously. And I don't even know what I was looking for on YouTube. When I saw the video, even the way you shoot your videos are engaging because it's very personable, because it's like you're right there at the camera and it's like you're talking directly to me. So you keep my attention. And again, that's what made me reach out to you. And if you can please share your social media one more time so everybody can go over and check you out. And I will put links down in the show notes to all of this also.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Like I said earlier, I'm on primarily on YouTube. That's the number one thing. I do YouTube videos, but I also post content on Instagram. I show, you know, kind of what we're doing as a family, all the way up to funny, maybe slightly crude memes. I think that's another thing that separates this channel from other police channels is I'm not afraid to speak my mind. I'm not afraid to post something that might be a little offensive. I like to push the envelope a little bit because that shows that we're human. You know what I mean? If you're just this uptight, prim and proper robot all the time, nobody's going to buy that. I'm just me on my content. Right. So YouTube, Instagram, and sometimes Facebook.
Officer 401, sir, I appreciate you. You stay safe out there. Guys, listen, whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on, please subscribe, please leave a review, share it, do all of that stuff. The more you do it, the more the algorithms boost us up and the more people can follow us and check out what we're doing here. On that note, I will see you guys on the next episode and we are out of here. Bye-bye.